go. Ladies and gentlemen, the holidays are upon us. Let's just face it. We're all just trying to ride through about the next 10 days and get into January unscathed, hopefully well enough so we can kind of get into the new year. But the next 10 days are always pretty troublesome for everyone. No one makes it through. We're going to try and make it through today's show because we've got a fantastic guest with us today. I want to thank everyone for listening to Drive Through HR. It is sunny and gorgeous in Dallas. I wish this weather, if I could program this weather, I would like for this weather to be here on Thursday. But it's here on Monday, and we'll just deal with it as it is. Let's get to our guest. Let's get out of weather talk and get right to our guest. Bertrand, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm doing fantastic. Thank you for having me.
Well, a couple things. Let's do the, because the audience has probably followed you at least on social and whatnot, and you speak at a lot of events, so you know you got a pretty nice footprint. But for those that don't know you, the vast thousands of people that are out there that might not know you, do us a favor and introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you.
Sure, thank you for that. So obviously, Bertrand Dussert, I'm a recovering recruiter at The Source, which is where I started my career, and sort of made my way through weaving in and out of the vendor and the buy side on the technology recruitment industry side for a period of time, and then ended up in HR as a recruiting leader initially for UBS Investment Bank. My timing was perfect. It was right during the financial crisis, so that was a good time and great learning for everyone. And then as global head of HR service delivery or HR shared services for American Express. And then most recently worked for Oracle as vice president of human capital transformation. And so that's the nutshell. The current just to give a feel for, so what does that mean? You know, what does a VP of HCM transformation, as we call it, really mean? It means I spent about a quarter of my time doing what you alluded to, which is speaking and learning and hearing from others, but about two-thirds of my time with customers. And the segment that I cover, just to give you some context, is generally a good proxy for it would be the Fortune 100. And I ran the numbers a couple weeks ago just out of curiosity. In the last couple of years, and this is where I feel like I've kind of had the dream job because I'm a curious guy. And I love to see sort of what everybody's doing. And I've had conversations with HR leadership teams, so either CHRO or direct reports, in over a third of the Fortune 100 companies in the last 2 years. So that's the,
wow.
You know, that's the context in terms of the direct feedback loop that I have. And it's such fun, you know, to after having sort of owned it and ran it for a while, it's nice to sort of see what everybody else is doing and give, you know, help maybe share some perspective or a little slightly different optic on what they're already looking at. Most of these people are really talented, really smart. Actually, almost all of them are really talented and really smart. So it's not, you know, it's not like they haven't thought of a lot of the big things. It's more around sort of, you know, have you thought of looking at this a little bit differently, and are there lessons that can be learned from what other industries or other companies are doing or what other functions are doing, like marketing and their journey of transformation that can be applied to HR. So that's what I do. And then the last, if your math is good out there, you'll notice that I didn't cover the 100% of my time. The remainder is spent with doing sort of feedback loops with our product strategy team a little bit, just in terms of here's what I'm hearing, and then also a little bit act as an informal advisor for our internal HR function in terms of their transformation that they're going through at the moment. So hopefully that gives you a feel. When I'm not at work, I'm often found on a bike or on a bike trainer, one of those electronic trainers that, you know, measure your power and everything else. I'm an avid amateur triathlete, I guess you could say that, four-time Ironman finisher, and I'm not very talented, but I'm very stubborn. So I find a way to get through them that way. So hopefully that gives you a feel. Thanks for having me.
Well, that's fantastic. So the cool thing is you've done the job. In a lot of cases, when you're talking to people, you can it's instant credibility. You're sitting across the table. It's like, hey, when I was here, these are some of the problems that we had, or these are some of the obstacles, et cetera. And it's instantly relatable. Like, you felt
right.
Their pain, and you kind of know that. And I think vendors that really kind of bring that to bear with their clients and say, listen, we're going to bring in practitioners that have done the job. I think that's your instant credibility. Like, it's different when you've never done the gig and you're telling someone how to either maximize their software, redesign their process, or whatever. Do us a favor, because you know everyone knows Oracle, but probably doesn't know Oracle. You know, I said this a couple of years about Connexia. I sat down with them to do a briefing. I'm like, I know you, but I don't know you.
Sure.
And I just need to cop to that. Like there's things that are going on at Oracle that I don't know about. No, you know, and you're closer to the fire. What are some of the things that we need to, at least in 2015, what are some of the things that we should pay attention to from Oracle?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a great point, and I'll try not to make this into a sort of an infomercial just for out of, you know, deference to the listeners. But, you know, I think our focus, I would say this, you know, we're a company that's got 130,000 employees all over the world. We have over 30,000 people in an R&D organization that invest over $5 billion a year in R&D. In terms of, and that spans the wide reach of product categories. I think something like 80 different product categories, ranging from hardware to database products that people have probably heard about, to middleware, but also to a very healthy and growing applications business, particularly in the cloud. And so, if you think of this company with 130,000 employees, you know, one of our biggest bets, or probably our biggest bet, but I don't want to speak for the whole company, but it seems to be the cloud. So huge investment and commitment to the cloud. Many listeners are probably familiar with Taleo, a company that we acquired two and a half years ago now. Another company by the name of Select Minds was an acquisition around the social sourcing space. And so if you look at the Oracle Human Capital Management Cloud, in terms of the Fortune 100, for example, where I spend much of my time, we have one portion of our cloud that's running in 73% of the Fortune 100 at a minimum. I think there was a stat that I had seen that of the Fortune 500, and I'd like to sort of double-check it, but almost 100% of the Fortune 500 use an Oracle product somewhere in their, you know, sort of their enterprise. Of some sort. But I think the biggest takeaway for people who have known or have heard of Oracle for a long time is, you know, it's one of the largest technology companies in the world, and it's one where the senior leadership has said, you know, the cloud is the critical investment focus. And of the modern, of the applications that matter in the modern enterprise, and this is right from sort of, you know, Larry Ellison a year ago at our big human capital management conference, said the two most important applications for the modern enterprise are the customer experience, CX, and human capital management. If you're differentiating yourself as a business by delivering better customer experiences, which is increasingly how you do that, you know, less on scaling costs, pure play, and more on how do I create a differentiated customer experience, a lot of that has to do with having employees that are truly engaged and want to create those experiences for customers. And so you got to take care of your employees. And the human capital application is the one that touches every single employee, and the CX application is the one that interacts with, you know, every single customer potentially. So hopefully that gives you a feel. You know, I won't go into revenue numbers or anything like that, other than just to point you to, you know, we had an earnings call last week, so it's all out there if anybody wants to, you know, sort of look it up. It's all out there.
That's the beauty of being public. It's like, no, really, right. We don't have to talk about it. Just go here. You know, how important is it? Because you've worked both as a practitioner and you're working on a vendor, working with practitioners side by side. How important is it for a vendor, a software vendor, an HCM vendor in the space, to be great at HR and recruiting?
I mean, I think it's critical. I mean, to us, we believe it's absolutely critical. And the reason being that what we're hearing from our customers is that as companies look to move to the cloud, they're looking, among other things, to get more agility and to get more simplicity. And to do that, and they're looking to get synergies across the data worlds of three or four different areas of their business. So not just, you know, go to the cloud and do it with, you know, two or three different providers, but actually how do I bring together, you know, either finance, HR, or increasingly marketing, supply chain planning. How do I pull all those things together so that I have a unified, you know, cloud solution that allows me to understand this? And HR is critical. I mean, it is the application that touches every employee. It's also critical because our customers are saying we're feeling like there's a transformation in HR that's not like the ones that have happened before. So if you look at the last 15 years, though, especially large organizations, they've had an average of 2 to 3 HR transformation initiatives. And if you look at staff ratios, for example, percentage of employees that sit in HR, it's hovered between 0.9 and 1.1% of total headcount for the last 15 years. It hasn't really moved. So this notion that, you know, there's a big payoff in doing HR transformation to make the HR function a little bit more efficient or a little more effective isn't really where the big bets should be placed. It's around reinventing the role of the people function to take a much closer look at every human power process. So there's a huge opportunity, and this is also why I think it's just a critical, you know, time. If you'd asked me this question 5 years ago, I would have said, I think it's important, but I don't know how many vendors actually agree. And when I say agree, I mean agree with investment as opposed to just agree with talk.
Right.
And so that's what got me excited about going back into the industry when I did, you know, 2.5 years ago after the financial crisis. Clearly, you know, the big players realized we need to reinvest here and help drive this migration in a significant way. And as part of this reinvention of the people function, the way I would describe it is that chief human resource officers want to get a closer and better understanding of how value is created for customers and the role that all people have in creating that value. And what I mean by all people, it's intentional not to use the term employee, because increasingly it is a hybrid workforce. So it's how are my employees delivering value, how are contingent labor workers delivering value, how is my supply chain or partner ecosystem delivering value? How does it sort of all come together? And what's I think, enabled a whole new level of conversation is this data universe that we live in. And I'm not going to, you know, I'll intentionally steer clear, other than my one reference to it now, from the big data term, because it's totally overused. and it only encapsulates part of the valuable data world in HR. And I'll sort of say I would focus more on data-driven HR. And what's happened is, just to give you a couple of metrics that maybe help anchor this, you know, 90% of the world's data is less than 2 years old. And our forecast is that it will increase by 50x by 2020.
Wow.
So we're moving into a world where, you know, historically, a lot of jobs were not very instrumented and measurable. Some were, like, let's say a call center. You know, even 5 years ago, you had really tight operational metrics. You knew exactly how productive people were, you know, average call handle time, percentage of call that were resolved on the first call, et cetera, right? But there were a lot of roles where, how do you know if, you know, associate marketing manager is doing a great job 5 years ago? Well, you know, it was a little bit hard to tell sometimes. And maybe that's not the best example, but I'm sure there are others that come to mind. But what's happening is, with this massive increase in data, you have these, I guess I would call it data exhausts, from processes that didn't exist or were not captured in a way that was consumable, you know, 5 years ago. And now, now it is. And so you have an opportunity to get way more insight into how employees actually create value, what drives the outcomes. You know, one example of this is like Salesforce productivity. You know, a lot of companies have struggled with, well, what is it that drives great Salesforce productivity? And I looked at some research, and I can't quite pin what the source was at the moment off the top of my head, but one of the findings that research surfaced was the top salespeople were actually working a little bit fewer hours a week than the middle of the bell curve. So, you know, that's the kind of thing where you go, okay, what are they doing? Are they just being smarter about the use of their time? Obviously, they're doing something else. It's not just, you know, clocking in earlier and leaving later. So there's lots of interesting, you know, and I could give sort of countless stories, firsthand and secondhand stories that I've heard of this data world being leveraged to answer questions that can totally change the role of HR. So I think, you know, HR historically was a function that was a little bit like finance or procurement or legal. It was a support staff function. It would have to run payroll. It still has to do all these things. But it was there to support the business. It had, you know, a list of processes that it needed to accomplish in the right way, and if those were met, it was kind of pass-fail. Did payroll run? Yep. Okay, good. But as you move forward, what we're seeing is HR increasingly taking on a role that's a little bit more akin to what a modern digital marketing function does with regards to a sales force, which is, you know, better understand and their role is, you know, on the marketing side, is help me better understand the customer, super segment it, understand what they're thinking, what matters most to them, not just what's important, what matters most, what drives buying behavior. A lot of those lessons can be, you know, taken right from marketing and moved over into HR to say, just replace customer with talent. You know, what drives, like, let's segment the talent. What do we really mean when we say top talent? Everybody says we need top talent. Well, what's top talent? What's the definition of top talent for us in our business? What actually drives, you know, what are the outcomes you really want? Okay, it's more revenue and more profitability. Okay, that's what you want, sustainably, over time in a way that, you know, works. Okay, well, what is, based on that, what is it that really defines top talent within the organization? So the first mistake most a lot of companies make is they don't define it for themselves. And then, you know, segment it, understand it. How do we bring it in? What's the real pipeline for that top talent? And how do we engage with it in a way that makes sense? And the end game for this is this notion that, you know, marketing 5 or 10 years ago, you were part of a target market group. So it wasn't a one-size-fits-all, but it was a, you know, a large market segment. We'll cater to it, and we'll build something for that segment. And now it's much more around, you know, market to me as an individual. Understand my preferences. You know, I go on Amazon.com and, you know, probably distressingly so for my wife, you know, their suggestions on things I might like to one-click purchase are really good.
Yeah, so, it's like they really know me. They know
right,
me.
Exactly, right, exactly. So it's, you know, and how, and not only do they really know me, but they also make suggestions and calls to action that are relevant to that too. So they demonstrate knowledge of me, but they also demonstrate the ability to provide me with offers that matter, right? Now, if you move that over sort of to the talent side, you know, how many either candidates or employees would say, my company, I mean, they might say my leader really knows me, hopefully, yeah, if they have a good leader, they can say that. But how many of them say, if I work for a 100,000-person company, my company really knows me, they know what matters to me, they tailor their offerings in terms of the employee value proposition to my preferences and what matters to me, and how many candidates would say the same thing? And in terms of, you know, the marketing offers can be a little bit, you know, parallel with, you know, job opportunities or even like the management of succession planning and internal mobility inside a company, right? How many employees can say today that, you know, my company does a really good job of showing me 6 or 7 different things I might want to consider doing next proactively that excite me and that feel like they're tuned to me, not just like my job grade or the role, the job, you know, the generic job description I'm in. So I'm probably giving you a rambling answer, but I think...
No. I think the only thing to add is that it isn't... well, one thing I would add to the for the audience is that it's a relentless pursuit to know you. So, it, you know, it's just so we move people's minds, it's probably a 3-year process, but you first of all need to make the investment, make the bet, change your processes, and really get to know the audience, i.e. employees and candidates the like. But it's not a one and done. It doesn't seem to be as an outsider. It doesn't seem to be, I got to know them once. It seems to be a kind of a never-ending or a relentless pursuit to always know them or, you know,
absolutely,
to constantly be knowing them. Is that kind of what you're thinking?
Absolutely. I mean, it's the equivalent of understanding at scale, right? Can you stay in touch with what your employees are thinking and doing on a 100,000 employee scale the way you can if you ran a 10-person company and you stood around the water cooler? And you got to understand what's on the minds of your employees. So it's, you know, understanding their actions, because sometimes their actions and their sentiment, what they say and what they do and what they think isn't always the same. So a perfect example would be, you know, employee surveys. Employee survey results don't always match employee actions. That's one of my favorite areas of study as a, you know, HR leader, is to understand that what they tell you versus the what they think, which is often communicated amongst themselves or to each other, as opposed to you as the employer, and what they do. Right, looking at those three, and oftentimes, you know, it's in the context of how do I drive engagement, and just a level set, because there's been a lot of discussion around, you know, is engagement a kind of a fluffy term, and what does it really mean? And my definition of it, or the one I've sort of chosen to adopt, is it really means two things. It means a willingness to consistently deliver discretionary effort in your job, and a persistent intent to stay. So, you know, I think that...
Say that again for the audience.
Yeah, so it's a willingness to consistently deliver discretionary effort, So do more than the minimum that's required in your job because you're passionate, because you care about your employee, because you want your employee to be successful, whatever it is, right? But it's the willingness to go above and beyond, discretionary effort, and the persistent intent to stay. So not just, you know, oh, today I'm intending to stay, but tomorrow I'm going to be distracted and want to leave the company, but like commitment basically to stay with the company. So if you have someone who's committed to staying with you and willing on a consistent basis to invest, you know, more effort than is required to do the job, to go above and beyond, that could be defined as a pretty highly engaged employee.
It sounds like marriage. I mean, am I missing anything? But it sounds
like
marriage.
Good marriage. Yeah, I would say
a good marriage, right?
a good marriage, right?
A couple things. We've got about 8 minutes left. I need to do two things around the people function. One is kind of, I think sometimes people don't know where to start. So you just outlined a wonderful strategy and kind of what to look for and all great intentions, but it might be overwhelming for folks. So let's kind of boil this down in next year. What are the one, two, three things that people should really be, you know, try this. Try this first, and then I got to ask you about Fortune 100 because I know people are curious about what actually happens at the Fortune 100. But let's do the people function and get people starter kit.
Yeah, so I think I would say you know, the quality of the questions you ask within your organization is more important than necessarily the answers that are, you know, suggested across the blogosphere, if you will. So I'd start with ask really high quality questions around how three trends can change your business. And the three trends I would focus on, just with bullet points, one is data-driven HR. So how does data change the role that HR can play? Look around the business. What can you measure today that you couldn't before? What data are you not using that you could be using? You know, one example would be the area I'd focus on first on that trend would be the measurement of sentiment. The measurement of sentiment, you're using employee surveys, I guess it's better than doing nothing. But there are much better ways to measure sentiment. There's sentiment analytic tools. There's the ability to, you know, to track what goes on in terms of the social media exhaust and just understand work to figure out how you can better understand what people are thinking within your organization than was the case in the past. Make it more real time. Make it more video as opposed to still photo. And the analogy I also use is if you've ever been to a hospital and you've seen the kind of monitors they put you on, you know, compare that level of constant monitoring of many vital signs versus you get your blood pressure checked once a year, and then you record that. That's the traditional, you know, employee survey. So that's maybe where I focus on that one trend. The second trend would be that agility and social HR is a big theme. And what I'm saying by that is that large organizations are realizing that just having scale and having efficient operations isn't enough. You have to be able to drive agility, and by agility I mean the ability to quickly identify trends in data that could point to opportunities or risks, try things very quickly to have them succeed or fail, and then if you find ones that succeed, create scale and go to market quickly. So look at HR's role in driving agility throughout the system. And one example of that could be, what is HR's role as the organization that looks after the end-to-end employee experience, and how are we communicating to employees, and how much communication are we doing with employees across, not just from HR, but like procurement, HR, finance, all this stuff that we're throwing at employees, how much of that is actually helping them do their job better?
Oh, that's
and
fantastic.
Dave Ulrich has that. What's that?
Oh, no, that's fantastic. I mean,
that's
exactly
that's the second. And then the third one, just to make sure that, and it's not the third in importance, it's the third just in sequence, arbitrary sequence, and maybe the first in importance, is the concept of talent as a customer. And my advice there is, you know, look at the evolving role, look at the journey that digital marketing functions have been on for the last 5 years, and start asking the question of what can we learn from their work and their evolution to make HR more tightly coupled with how we create value for customers, better understand our talent, better segment our talent, and deploy it, you know, in the way that creates the most value. And there was an article I wrote in Forbes, you know, late last year called HR Leaders Should Think Like the Chief Marketing Officer. You know, it's along sort of that line. Does that help a little bit?
Absolutely. This is, I mean, it's the bite-sized stuff. I think that it lessens some of the anxiety of, I'm not there. I know I should be there. Where the heck do I start? You just gave folks a wonderful kit. I think people are curious as to both your experience on the practitioner side, but also what you see hopping in and out of different client experiences on the Fortune 100. What's actually going on there? What do you see at the Fortune 100, like obstacles that they're overcoming or challenges that's happening up there? Because most people, I think, you know, out of the people that listen to the call, we probably have a solid mid-market and small market, but not the Fortune 100. So they're probably curious as to what really happens at that stratosphere.
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's some things that have become viewed as table stakes. So traditional HR service delivery, you know, like you know, payroll, employee servicing, open enrollment, all this stuff that you have to do, and you have to do it quite well. All that stuff is kind of pass-fail now in those big companies because it's just kind of expected. And many of them have gotten quite good at doing it. So that side is kind of, you know, it's been done. Another area that's a little bit table stakes is, you know, the whole discussion around mobile. Not all of them have a completed implementation of all the capabilities that they would like yet. So certainly on the external front, for example, are they all as mobile-enabled on the recruitment side as they'd like to be? Probably not, but are they all aware that this is, like, mobile is not a differentiator? Mobile is a must-do, and it's how you run the business, actually. You know, it's a pretty consistent theme. So if you see Fortune 100 companies that, you know, lack mobile capability, it's usually not because of lack of awareness. It's probably timing in terms of a, you know, a three-year journey to get their assets there. The biggest trend, I would say, with the Fortune 100 this year and next year compared to, like, let's say 3 years ago, is a much bigger commitment towards moving a larger part of the enterprise to the cloud. And the main obstacles to that were that the economics of cloud applications were most favorable initially for smaller and mid-sized companies. Some of the largest companies in the world had already, you know, sort of deep investments in highly efficient, you know, infrastructure, teams that knew how to run on-premise systems, et cetera. What's changed over the last 2 years, I think, both from the perspective of market maturity is further along than it was, you know, 2 years ago, and some of the big investments that were made by the Fortune 100 on infrastructure and in-house systems, et cetera, are starting to reach, you know, closer to the end of life. And so they're saying, wow, if I'm looking at an investment alternative decision today, it's probably not the same that it was 2 years ago. So I'm interested in more going to the cloud. And my biggest challenge is probably complexity and eliminating complexity. Some of the world's largest companies have upwards of, some of the largest I've seen is 1,000 systems in HR.
Wow.
I know that sounds crazy, but that's more than one company that has that situation. Many of them, it's not at all uncommon to have 200 to 300 systems in HR. Some of them could be, you know, an access-based database that handles compensation for a segment in a country. But
right.
I'm not talking about an Excel spreadsheet, you know, something that has login credentials and et cetera. So hopefully
that
gives you, you know, a feel. What they're not lacking is really talented, intelligent people working the issue. It's just complex, has a lot of change management involved with it, and they're trying to move, you know, something really big really quickly. And
right.
Otherwise everybody would be doing it.
Well, my friend, I told you 30 minutes would fly by, and we are at the end of 30 minutes, and it has indeed flown by. How do, with the 40 seconds left, how do people keep up with you? What's the best way to keep track of what your comings and goings?
Yeah, I think Twitter. If they could, you know, happy to, love to have them follow me on Twitter, and always welcome to dialogue. It's at Bertrand Dussert, just first and last name, no, nothing in between. So it's Bertrand and Dussert. You know, reach out to me on LinkedIn. Happy to accept the invites, and I'm also fairly active on some of the LinkedIn groups. So,
awesome.
And also, go ahead. Yeah, that's probably the best way.
All right, my friend. Well, thank you very much for the time today. I know you're super busy at this time of the year, as well as all the other times of the year. But thanks for the time. Thanks for everyone for listening to a little drive-through HR, and we're going to go out to a little happy. Thanks, my friend.
It might seem crazy.